discovery, joy, presence, and living with authenticity. We can create positive change in the world, and it starts within each one of us. Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Mondays at noon on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver. Hello and welcome to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I am your host, Marie Bernard. That song was by Surya from her album, The Surya Sound. And today we are going to be speaking about picking your yoga practice. We are here today with Megan McCrary, and she's the author of Pick Your Yoga Practice. And it's late January. I'm not saying all of you are doing this. I'm not saying you are doing this, but many people have already started to give up on their New Year's resolutions. So if yoga was one of your resolutions for the new year, you're going to want to listen to today's show. Welcome to the show, Megan.
Thanks, Ray. I'm so happy to be here.
Yay. Well, I just want to give you a bit of an intro. You're a Los Angeles-based yoga teacher, and you're the author of Pick Your Yoga Practice. You teach at Equinox Sports Clubs, and you work one-on-one with some of the entertainment industry's leading professionals, and you hold workshops and retreats all over the U.S. and the world. And your website is MeganMcCrary.com. So thank you so much for being with me today. And I'm just curious now, can you give us an overview of the book and who would want to read this book?
You know, the book is a great, so the book breaks down major styles of yoga, and it's basically divided into two sections. The first section of the book, you're going to get chapters on what yoga is, the history of yoga in the United States, as well as a three world view chapter that explains the different philosophies that underwrite the styles. The second part is all about the styles of yoga. So really the book is for anybody who's already involved in yoga, teachers of yoga, because we tend to study only one style deeply, as well as people who are looking to get into yoga but may be a little intimidated and want a little information to feel confident going in to the style that they choose for themselves.
Thank you. Well, I am curious. Now, I was looking in your book, and the two types of yoga that I'm familiar with, Hatha yoga and Yin yoga, I don't see them in the book.
that's a little bit confusing, because the term Hatha yoga, actually, Hatha is the physical branch of yoga. So to me, all of the styles of yoga that are included in my book, because they're dealing with the physical practice of yoga, they're all actually fall under the umbrella of Hatha yoga.
Oh.
Now, Hatha yoga has begun to take on its own type of style. And what I've determined from talking with teachers, the people that are calling themselves Hatha yoga classes, they're just trying to differentiate themselves from flow classes, but they don't necessarily fit into a style, so it's sort of a catch-all term. If you're not a Bikram teacher, or if you're not an Iyengar teacher, from what I can gather, people are just calling themselves Hatha yoga. The yin's a little bit different. So looking back, I might have wished I included yin in the best of the rest chapter. However, I always considered yin a part of most style practices. So like Sivananda Yoga, Integral Yoga, they have their own restorative yin practice within that system of yoga. So in each chapter, if they included yin or restorative practices, I spoke to that under the style.
So, Megan, what is the difference between a hatha-type yoga, a physical yoga, and what you mentioned, a flow yoga?
Okay, so there isn't. So flow yoga is a form of hatha yoga. It's very confusing even to me. So yoga is a very large tradition. You can think of it as a tree. Then each branch is a different chapter of yoga, you can even think. So one branch is called hatha yoga, which is all the physical asana practice. Asana means poses. So under a hatha yoga branch, you're going to get Sivananda yoga, Integral yoga, Vinyasa yoga, Iyengar yoga, Ashtanga yoga. So that's generally the catch-all hatha yoga term. And then you have bhakti yoga, which is devotional practices. You have jnana yoga, which is the study practices. You have meditation yoga, which is called raja yoga, and all that. So the difference may be when you see a hatha yoga class compared to when you see a flow class on the schedule. What I've come to understand is hatha yoga means not flowing fastly through poses, more holds, a little more attention to detail alignment depending on the teacher. Does that make sort of sense? The term hatha yoga means physical yoga practice. So essentially, we're all teaching hatha yoga in the West. But it's become its own, it's between context and denotation. So it's like, hatha yoga has become its own thing, which basically means you're not flowing quickly from the poses. Does that make sense, Marie? I'm so sorry.
I think so. I'm not super familiar with yoga, so I appreciate you explaining it. I just know that as quite a beginner, I was looking for a more gentle class, and I thought hatha yoga was kind of that type of class.
Yes. Hatha yoga, yes, would be more of a gentle type of class. Yes. If you're seeing hatha yoga on the schedule, that would be an appropriate place. It's not going to move fast. It's not your power dynamic type flowing. Yeah.
Okay.
It's just there's a larger definition of hatha, and now it's become to mean sort of something else recently as far as on schedule at studios.
Okay, thank you for clarifying that. I appreciate it. And are you okay answering questions if anyone wants to call in and ask you something?
Yeah, sure, of course.
Okay, so I'm just going to put the number out there, 604-822-2487. That's 604-822-2487 if you'd like to call in and ask Megan McCrary a question about picking your yoga practice or anything. How long have you been practicing yoga?
How long? About 10 years, a little over.
Great, and how long have you been teaching it?
I'm approaching my 7-year mark. I've been teaching in LA for about 6 years, and I was certified almost a year before I moved out here.
Hmm. And I'm curious, thank you, Megan, when you are teaching workshops, what do you teach in those workshops? Do you do like a yoga class?
Yeah, so in a yoga class, they're usually an hour and a half, but now everything's switching to an hour and 15. You're going to get an overall experience. Now, in a workshop, I'm choosing things to focus on. So I have a shoulder and neck workshop coming up because I also teach yoga therapy. So the workshop, the 3-hour workshop, is specifically geared towards the shoulder and neck. So you'll be learning only about the shoulder and neck. You'll be learning what to do to relieve the shoulder and neck tension. I often do a headstand, shoulder stand workshop. So the whole workshop is just working on those two poses. I have heart opening workshops where we do all back bends and we learn how to create deeper openings. In a regular class, you don't have that much time to break down, to demo, to try partner things, to explain more in depth. So that's what you're going to get in a workshop and on a retreat.
Are you going to do a video of that neck and shoulder workshop? Because I could really use that.
You know, it's a really interesting thing because, you know, it is chronic in our society, is the neck and shoulder tension. And it's a catch-22 because the body reads neck and shoulder tension as, well, it's stress, but the body reads it as fear. So then it kicks in your fight or flight system even more, which then creates more tension in your neck and shoulders. So So allowing your neck and shoulders to release actually signals to the body, I'm safe, which kicks in the parasympathetic nervous system. So this neck and shoulder thing and jaw, we include the jaw because the jaw is actually what we consider cervical spine zero, which is the top of your neck. So we do a lot of jaw releasing. It's chronic, I know. I'm a neck, and being a writer also, my neck and shoulders are constantly up and in the wrong position. So I have to do a lot of work on my own at home to reverse. And the work that I do at home on my own is what I'll be sharing in the workshop.
So, Megan, just to clarify that, it sounds like you're saying if you have chronic neck and shoulder tension, that your body is actually kind of chronically releasing the adrenaline and cortisol and those types of...
Yes. Isn't that incredible?
Wow.
So
but
because there's tension in your jaw, the tension's probably from stress, but then the jaw sends a signal to your nervous system, oh, there's tension in the jaw. You must be getting ready to fight or flight, dumping more cortisol, adrenaline. So it becomes a vicious cycle.
Wow. So, okay, so how do we get that class then?
I know. I don't know. Maybe I need to, I don't have plans to put it, tape the video, but I do have in the works doing like 5-10 minute YouTube clips, or I'm working with a filming company. So that will be one of my first things to do, showing how to use the blanket roll to release neck and jaw tension, showing you what you can do at home to stretch the neck and jaw. I always caution against that because it's easy to look at the stretch and think you know how to do it, but if your body's slightly out of alignment, it's not going to have the same effect.
Hmm.
So it's good to be in a workshop so you can be in front of a teacher to then feel it in your body. But the way things are, there's so much information now on the internet and people are becoming so savvy. And all of that. You know, you've given me some great ideas to think about, Marie.
Okay, thank you. Well, I know that I'm actually going to see my chiropractor today. So,
Oh, okay. Yeah. And just curiosity, does your chiropractor also work on the muscles, or does he just do bone adjustment?
She does a tiny bit of release on my neck and stuff sometimes if she does an adjustment. But it's mostly, I mean, it's like a 15-minute appointment, so there's only so much time.
Yeah, if you don't mind, I'd love to speak to that for just a second. So what I've learned working with body workers and physical therapy and my own yoga therapy is that there's a tripod, so a triangle, the bones, then you have the muscles, then you have the nerve. So I do think it's important to be getting with somebody who addresses all threes. Most people don't have nerve problems. So like my chiropractor, make sure he addresses the muscles more so than the bones, because let's say you just address the bones, I get an adjustment, then the muscles are still in the wrong place. So the muscles re-pull the bone out of place.
Yeah.
So I got to go back for another adjustment. Does that make sense? So
yeah.
It's important to be also addressing the release of the tension of the muscles that are holding the vertebrae of your neck.
Hmm. So how do you find a chiropractor that does that? Because I don't have the money to go for a massage every time, so I go to the chiropractor.
No, and I actually don't go for massages at all now that I found body workers, because I have problems in my body that I'd rather address than go get a massage. If I were you, I would look, and insurance should take it. There is a really great technique called active release technique, ART. And you'll be able to find chiropractors that are also trained in ART. So there should be an ART website for Canada, and then you'd go and find a chiropractor and see if that would somehow work into your budget. Because then also, you know, if you don't have the budget, the stress of the money is going to increase the shoulder and neck tension. So ideally, we're able to take care of these things that work for us in our lifestyle.
So is it release?
Active release, correct.
With an S, okay. All right. Thank you. Active Release Technique, ART. Awesome. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I love learning new stuff that helps with my stuff. Yeah, because I didn't realize. I mean, I know it causes pain and headaches, and it definitely drains your energy when you've got this tension going on in your neck and shoulders. Mm-hmm. But I didn't realize that it's actually contributing to that adrenaline and the fight or flight response. That is, yeah, because even if I'm not stressed, I feel more stressed when I'm in physical discomfort.
Always, of course. And, you know, I learned about that a lot when I was researching forest yoga, which is in the best of the rest. Forest yoga is a specific style that really addresses neck and shoulder tension because of that circularity of the fight or flight tension, kick in more cortisol, more tension.
Awesome.
So you may be interested in learning more about forest yoga.
Cool. I will. I've made a note of that. Thank you. So we're speaking with Megan McCrary right now. She is the author of Pick Your Yoga Practice. You can find her at MeganMcCrary.com. And her name, Megan, is M-E-A-G-A-N, McCrary.com. And what is your YouTube channel, Megan?
You know what? I haven't started one yet. And if you follow me also on Facebook, which is Megan McCrary Yoga, oh, that's where I'll make announcements and put out the videos when they do come out.
Okay, great. I will do that. I am writing it down right now on Facebook.
Oh, you're fantastic.
Perfect. Yay, thank you. And so thank you so much. This has just been really helpful already, and we're only 15 minutes into the show, so I'm excited. 604-822-2487. That's 604-822-2487 if you have questions about yoga. One of the things I go through, I've been to a few yoga classes, and you did mention the 90 minutes. I find an hour is about my limit. I want to go home after that.
Mm-hmm. You know what? That's what all the research and everything's leaning towards. So 5 years ago, it was hour and a half. Slowly over time, now you rarely see a class over an hour and 15. So the way you're feeling is the way the majority of public is feeling, so they're requesting hour and hour and 15. Now, as a yoga teacher, for me, because I like to get into the nitty-gritty and work specifically towards what we call an apex pose, which requires specific openings in the body, which requires specific actions in place, I like the hour and a half to get that deep in the body. But, of course, I'm a yoga teacher, and I recognize not everybody has an hour and a half. And an hour is, you can get great benefits from doing an hour of breathing and moving consciously.
Thank you. Well, I think that it would depend on the practice. Like, I used to take, there was this class at my gym. It wasn't yoga. It was just called, it was a stretch class. And it was really gentle stretches that we held for quite a long time. And I always felt taller and more balanced. I just felt so good after the class. And I guess it wasn't popular enough because it didn't have the name yoga in it. And they canceled the class. And that was really the only exercise class I've actually fully enjoyed. And I'm wondering, because I don't like doing downward dog. It makes me all dizzy. And what would be the closest type of yoga to that?
I would check out integral yoga. It's a lot more gentle, it's a lot more meditative, more seated postures and stretching, which you're referring to. Integral Sivananda yoga. Those are the two main gentle ones. But interesting enough, so if you were to go to like Iyengar Yoga Center or Iyengar Yoga website, you'll be able to find a restorative class. It's not the style, but it's a type of class within the Iyengar system, and that's the class that you're referring to that you'd really like, where they're holding poses. Oftentimes, especially in Iyengar, you'd be using props, laying down most of the time, things like that. So a restorative class, a yin class, and you know, they're just not as popular, and it's a shame because they are extremely beneficial. The restorative yoga and the class you're referring to moves the spine in all directions, which is extremely important to keep the connective tissue along the vertebrae of our spine supple. As that locks up, we lock up the nervous system. We lock up the nerves that feed the different organs. That locks up, and as you said, as things lock up, emotional stuff comes up. You're exhausted. You can't think right. So the restorative yoga really works to restore your system by gently opening the spine in all directions.
So that makes sense, because the few yoga classes that I've done, towards the end, I feel this emotional release where I could cry, even though I'm fine. Like, it just comes out of my body, and I just feel, yeah, it's weird.
Well, that's everybody's reaction. I just was talking to a student yesterday after class who was petrified of back bends, because every time he would do a back bend, he would start crying. And as a man, that's tough. The first 5 yoga classes I took, I cried hysterically after. What happens is the body stores emotions in our cells. The body stores emotions really in our hips and our shoulders, our pelvic floor. And the beautiful part about yoga is that when you work into the body and you breathe, especially in those longer holds like you were referring to, the stuff releases in your body and it gets to come up and be processed out. Oftentimes without us having to intellectualize it, which is nice because it's just in our bodies, we cry, we don't know why, and now it's gone.
I like that.
Yay. And that's a lot to do with, if you read the chapter on Kripalu Yoga, they have a technique called riding the wave of sensation, which just means staying with it without judgment or attachment to what comes up and just allowing it to process out.
Awesome. Well, speaking of the Kripalu Yoga, I want to come back to the very beginning of the book where you have these 2 pages, Yoga Styles at a Glance. And I just find this really useful because, well, maybe you'll probably be able to describe it better than I can.
Oh, the table, the church is great. So it sort of just breaks down, like what you were saying, like if you want a more gentle approach, if you want a hot, sweaty approach, if you want an approach that's going to give you more individual attention, you can sort of go down the chart, pick what you'd like, and then go over, and then you'll see which style fit that description. So then you can turn to those chapters specifically and find out more, and then possibly take a class with a well-informed mind.
Thank you. Megan, I have a couple more questions about the difference between live classes and doing a DVD at home or something, because there's a couple of reasons that I don't practice yoga regularly. Number one is it is not cheap in this city to do yoga. Number two, when I get into a class, well, first of all, often the classes are quite packed and I like to have a lot of space. But the biggest thing is, and I know yoga, they always say at the beginning, like, you're doing your own practice, keep your practice on your own mat, but I compete with the best people in the class, and I bend myself all out of shape, and I do it, and then I regret it later.
Yeah.
So what do you do about that?
Welcome to the lessons of yoga. So, I always find that paradox funny. Don't compete, don't compete, don't compete, and then you're in a room with people who, you know, are competing against each other. It's just our nature in the West to be in a room. But the gift is you're aware of it now. And you got to go back and reflect, oh, I pushed myself too much and I hurt myself. So hopefully with that conscious awareness, next time you go into the classroom, you'll make the decision that's healthiest for you and not do that. Now, that's a lesson that's hard for most of us, right? It takes a few times. We're only human. But the classroom setting can be hard. It also can be amazingly uplifting. I think it depends on the teacher and the environment she creates, he or she creates, I should say. So in my class, there are very, very mixed levels, but it is part of my job description and what I take the most serious, that every single person, no matter what ability, what body shape, that they feel like they belong and their contribution somehow mattered. So it's going to depend. Practicing at home is great, and with a DVD, I would suggest practicing in front of a teacher first, only because yoga is a very repetitive exercise. So let's say, you know, you do down dog 17, 18 times in one yoga video, but you're doing it wrong, you're going to leave with neck tension. So you may want to be with a teacher who's teaching you how to perform the down dog most optimally for your body, so that when you get into the video, you're like, okay, I remember what that teacher said. I'm going to do my down dog this way, even though there's not a teacher watching me now. Does that make sense?
It does, and it brings up another question, because especially in this city and on the West Coast, in LA, I'm sure it's the same. Everyone and their dog is becoming a yoga teacher.
Oh, yeah.
So how do you pick a teacher that actually knows what they're doing?
So it's very difficult. I mean, you can imagine in Los Angeles alone, you're getting like 200, 300 new yoga teachers every other month. And the standards have not caught up to how quickly it's grown. So you do have to be careful. I would always read a teacher's bio. I would look for words like alignment. I would, if you start to understand the styles, in the book they also explain the teaching credentials necessary. So if you begin to understand the styles, you then would go to like my bio and you would see that I'm trained in Anyasara yoga, which is very alignment focused, which means it's going to be safer because it's really specific about the placement of the bones and the foundation of the feet and the hands and how you create more freedom and stability at the same time in your body. So you need to read the description. I would look and see who they've studied with. You have to do your homework like anything else. Who they've studied with, what their philosophy is, what their focus is. Like on my website, you'll see I'm alignment-focused and therapy-focused. Teachers will say they're breath-focused, they're flow-focused, which means you're moving a lot quicker from pose to pose, and you're less concerned with the position of each pose. Do your homework, see who they trained with, see what their focus of class is. And my biggest, talk to the teacher. Go early, talk to the teacher after class. How receptive are they to questions? I believe that if a teacher is not open to questions, they're probably not the teacher for you. You should be able to ask questions. Why am I doing it this way? This hurts. Should I do it a different way? I think a good teacher will say, I don't know if they don't know. Let me find out. Let me get back to my teacher who can maybe tell you. Developing a personal relationship with your yoga teacher is not only going to keep you, like, safe, but it's also going to... It makes your yoga practice that much better. It makes your experience. So I really think the personal connection with a yoga teacher is just as important as the personal connection to the style of yoga.
Hmm. Thank you.
Well, it's hard because you're talking also, then you're going into classes like in L.A. with 50, 60 people. So maybe you want to find a style that has more personalized attention. And then a donation class is always a good way to go.
How do you find those? I was actually going to ask you if there's, because there's all these yoga studios that are all fancy and they're in their Lululemons and all Botoxed up. And that's just not, I don't feel good about myself when I compare. And I know this is a whole practice in and of itself, is comparing myself to those women or men. But I just want to be in like a more low key environment where it's not corporate. It's just about the yoga.
I totally feel you. And, you know, I'm in my 30s now, but when I was in my 20s, you know, super fit and thin and doing all the yoga, I was uncomfortable in studios like that. You know, so it's not just about, it's just about who you are. And so I would go into some studios that were very corporate, very Lululemon, very posh, you know, the Botox and the lipstick, and I immediately felt uncomfortable. I think you can walk into a studio and just by how the front desk greets you, know whether or not you're going to enjoy your time there. So it's about knowing that there are different options. Maybe they're not the most popular or the most publicized, but there are places where you can go, and it's super low-key. I really think you're going to like Integral Yoga or Sivananda Yoga is what I'm getting. I like Anyasara Yoga because the community, when I walked into an Anyasara studio, I knew that I just felt at home. So, and I didn't anywhere else. So it's about willing to go and try and then to know it's not for you. You know, if you're uncomfortable in the class, give yourself permission to get up and walk out. It's fine. It's about you being comfortable.
I like that because I don't think I would ever... Yeah,
no.
I would stay there and just, like, painfully tolerate it till it was over.
No, but you'd be surprised how people, yeah, people do. And it's, I think a good yoga teacher is not going to have the ego and is going to say, do what you need to do to take care of you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. That's given me a lot to think about, and I'm sure people who are listening are thinking the same thing. Again, if you do have a question, people get shy. They don't want to call in, but if you do have a question, 604-822-2487. That's 604-822-2487. There's so much. I mean, yoga is such a huge topic. So many of us are only really aware of, now that it's become trendy, that version of yoga. But maybe you could give us a little bit of the background on yoga and how it came to be trendy Lululemon.
Okay, so it's been a really interesting relationship yoga's had with America. So in the beginning, way back in like the David Thoreau days, and everybody was very into the philosophy and the ideas and writing poetry about like some of the yogic texts, specifically the Bhagavad Gita. So it was this very it was very conceptual and theories and practices and meditations. And then at one point there was a teacher in here, his name was Peter Bernard. He's not in the book because I didn't want to get into all the rumors and the gossips, but for a little while there was this big backlash in the 40s that yoga was a cult and didn't want women to be doing yoga, and this Peter Bernard was stealing wives, and it's really quite colorful and interesting, and there's some good books that speak to it, and a quick Google search will tell you about that. Then in the 60s and 70s, when you had all the free love, hippie days, anti-war, everybody was going for elevated states of consciousness. Psychedelics were big at play. And at that time, yogis, gurus, and swamis from India were all coming over, sharing their concepts, their meditation practice, sharing Kriya Yoga, sharing philosophies. And all of them were sharing sort of different paths, but they were all preaching it leads to the same place. So in the 60s and 70s, you had all these gurus coming over and teaching America's youth, there's other ways of reaching these higher states of consciousness that don't require drugs. So people all of a sudden got huge on these ashram things, and people were moving into ashrams and taking vows of celibacy and going after the real Indian tradition of yoga. Ram Dass was leading pilgrimages and was very, very a hotbed of ideas and new things. And then over time, it had to become assimilated into American culture. And there was different styles that took on American psychology and incorporated into yoga. Different teachers Americanized their yoga a little more, took out the Sanskrit words, all of that. The interesting thing was in the 80s, yoga pretty much disappeared, because it was the aerobics craze, and nobody was into sitting around chanting, stretching, and meditating. So Jane Fonda became the guru, and yoga fell off. In the early 90s, yoga sort of re-imaged itself as a hot, sweaty way, mindful way, to become light and thin and muscular. So that's when Bikram yoga, that hot yoga, became really popular. That's when power yoga really hit the scene, came into gyms. Power yoga actually just started because people weren't going to Ashtanga yoga, because Ashtanga sounds crazy. So Beryl Bendel Birch is her name, and Brian Kess decided to call it something else, to let people know what it is. Power yoga. It's a real sweaty workout. It's an amazing workout. So in the 90s, what happened is a lot of celebrities turned to yoga. Well, as we know, once the celebrities start turning, it turns the whole craze. So then from there, yoga grew exponentially through the early 2000s. Yoga studios popped up like Starbucks, brandings. Now Nike, everybody has a yoga line. Everybody has a yoga representative. You have yoga on billboards. Lululemon went public, where I forget, you're in Canada, so of course you guys know all about Lululemon.
Yeah.
They were a privately owned company before. Now it's sort of the growth became more, less explosive, more gradual, but you still see a lot of yoga studios popping up. Now you're seeing a lot of yoga hybrid, yoga and cycling, yoga and dance, yoga and boxing. Those seem to be very popular right now. And then I think with anything else that we've done here in the West and, in the North America, is we've commercialized, we've figured out how to make money. And so we've commercialized yoga, which, some view as a problem and some don't see as a problem. I talk to many senior yoga teachers that have been teaching for 30 years, 25, 30 years. And the last question I asked him is, you know, how do you feel about the state of yoga in America and the commercialization? And almost all of them said, you know, we're fine with it. We're fine with it. You know, the tradition is watered down to an extent, but that makes it accessible to thousands more people. And it's not like the real, I hate to use the word real, it's not like the deeper teachings of the yoga tradition, the deeper, more spiritual practices. They're still there, and they're still available, and they're not watered down. But more people are going to eventually land there if we cast a wider net. So they're saying it's okay, but then, you know, you do, yoga is an internal practice as well, so as it's become more commercialized, you have to also, it's a concept of hugging, what I say, hugging the midline. The more you go out and expose yourself, the more you have to hold on to what's true to you. So as it's become more commercialized, it's become, for people like you and I, more intimidating, if I can say that, in the room with the Lululemons and all the fanciness and the commercialization. But at the same time, that's teaching me how to really know who I am and know that that stuff's not that important to me and to not get caught up in comparing with something that's not important to me to begin with. So it's a very interesting paradox.
Definitely is. Well, yeah, I don't have a problem with people profiting from something that is benefiting people.
Right.
I think if you're providing a service, you should be compensated for it. It's just that it seems like that's what's happened. And so for me, I'm going to have to do more research into finding a yoga practice that works for me, that I feel comfortable with.
100%. And 100%. And I think just knowing, because the ones that are very commercial, very corporate, they're, of course, the ones that are on the top of the Google search. Mm-hmm. They're the ones with the billboards. So if that... just knowing that that's not all that's out there is the first step. And then probably, you know, we have to do a little more of our own research, correct?
So I'm not sure where to take... Okay, since we're talking about this right now, I have so many questions and they could go in so many different directions. But what should people consider when... What else should they consider when they're trying to decide what yoga practice is best for them?
And where to start. Okay, I love this. I think first and foremost, people need to consider their needs, starting with physical needs. Do you have limited range of mobility? Are you going to yoga because your doctor told you to? Did you have a sports injury? Are you looking to lose weight? Are you trying to find a healthy exercise that supports the weight you're at? These are all things you need to consider. Do you need personalized attention? So the different styles are going to offer different things. So physical needs start to consider. Physical wants and desires start to consider. And I'm a pretty emotional person, so the emotional aspect of yoga is a big deal. Are you somebody who needs a more nurturing style and teacher? Are you somebody who needs a teacher that's going to, you know, drill you through the poses to keep you motivated and going? You know, I don't know. Everybody has different needs and temperaments that work different in different environments. So it's about knowing you. I would definitely consider whether or not you're, you know, I tell them all the time, what are you looking to get out of your experience of yoga? Are you just trying to find out what it's about? Are you trying to develop a deeper connection to yourself? Are you simply wanting to move and breathe, and this is one of the most healthy all-around exercises there is? So what are you looking for? Because obviously not everyone's looking for the same thing. Some of us are looking for a nice big class environment and go, go, go. Some of us are looking for a more gentle environment where there's fewer people in the class. Maybe there's only 8 or 10, and you're going to spend some time sitting quietly. So know what kind of experience you want, know what your needs are, know where you feel best about yourself temperamentally as far as emotional needs, and then whether or not you want to be a student. So this comes up a lot. In my class, I require people to stay in their mind because you're using your mind to align the bones of the body and the poses. I'm making you think about how you're placing your feet, which way you're using your muscles, which direction the muscles are going in. now, then I'll come up to people and be like, oh, God, they hate my class because they sort of want to come in, check out, just move their body and listen to music. Totally fine, totally valid. But you're not going to get that in my class, so maybe my class isn't for you. So think about those things as well. Do you want to learn about the poses, or do you just want to be told what to do?
Can you give me a little more clarification on the learning? Because when you're in your mind, I mean, one of my problems is I'm always in my mind. I can't, like, shut it off. And at the same time, I can see the benefit of really being conscious of each pose.
Mm-hmm.
So can you tell me a little more about the difference between those two attitudes?
Yes. Very good question. And Iyengar is an alignment-based practice, and they actually call what they do meditation in motion. So meditation doesn't mean that your mind's completely blank. It could actually mean single-pointed focus. So it could be as if you're so focused on the position of your shin bone, you can't possibly be thinking about anything else. That's a meditation. So the mind's still turning off that constant chatter because it's focused on one thing. Except I'm a mind person and perfectionist, so sometimes I have a hard Okay, so let's go over the differences. In a flow class where you're not getting as much alignment instruction and you're more there to just turn your mind off and go with the breath, it'll sound something like this. Inhale, lift your arms up. Exhale, forward fold. Inhale, warrior two. Exhale, chaturanga dandasana. So more calling out the poses and the breath. Something like mine will be inhale, step your right foot between your thumb, turn your left foot to the ground, press into your outer edges of your feet, rise to stand. So do you see a little bit of the difference?
Yes. And are you doing that and showing that? Because if you'd said that to me, I'd be like, what?
Yes. And then that's the other thing. I don't show the other kids, I put you in the back so you could watch. And it's just interesting. It's the way you're trained. So when I go into a flow teacher's class and I say that, they all look at me like, what? But if I were to walk into that class and say, inhale, warrior two, they would all step into that pose. So, but if somebody new wouldn't know what a warrior two was either. So you have to look around in the room. And I would also be going much slower. So it would be inhale, place your foot. Let's say you're in a down dog. It would be inhale, lift your right leg up. Exhale, place your right foot between your thumbs. Next, inhale, turn your left heel down to the earth. Exhale, press into your feet. So it may be better. Somebody may prefer someone saying, you're in down dog, inhale, lift your right leg up. Exhale, warrior two. So more is the same, putting someone in the same position, just in different ways. Does that make sense? Kind of.
I think so. I don't think I'd be doing that class because I hate downward dog.
Okay, yeah. And you know what? You need to also look at a system called yoga tune-up. Downward dog is one of the poses that's done incorrectly the most often and causes the most discomfort. A lot of people's bodies aren't open to do downward dog, and I'm just willing to bet no one's shown you how to make the specific adjustments to make downward dog more comfortable for your body. The biggest advice I could ever give in downward dog is to keep your knees bent. So if you were to come to my class, the difference would be, so at a class where you want to learn as opposed to a class where you're just going through the poses, I would physically come over to you in your down dog pose, first tell you to bend your knees, then I would show you bend your knees next to you, and then I would maybe bend the knees for you and put you into position. But then from there, I would hope that every time you came there, you would want to follow the pattern I gave you and want to be in that position. So like for instance, in a forward fold, let's say you're standing and you just forward fold to touch the earth. Now, a lot of people lock their knees out, which is putting pressure on the disc between the vertebrae of your low spine. I'm going to go over and tell that student, please bend your knees, tell them why, and ask them to do it. Now, they may not like that and want to just keep their legs straight, no matter what. So it's all about temperament. It's all about knowing yourself and then also being willing to try something that may not sound like for you. On my retreat just got back from Tulum, Mexico. There was a woman, very first day, that said she was never going to do handstands. She was a professional cyclist, so I knew she was an athlete. So if I spoke to her in terms of athletic language, naming the muscles, explaining why, she would then understand. And she was doing handstands. She was willing to try and do handstands. So it's not being totally closed-minded to new experiences as well.
Okay, fair enough. I just know whenever I do the downward dog, like, all the blood rushes to my head. I feel ill.
That's different. That's more. Do you get vertigo?
Occasionally, yeah.
Okay, so most people that do because I've never had vertigo or anything. Down dog isn't. It may probably isn't optimal for you if it's a physiological reaction like that. It could also mean that you're not getting enough oxygen in your blood, different things. But yeah, and that would be a case where I wouldn't do a class that has down dog exactly.
Okay, thank you. So Megan, I'm curious too, also because we were talking about the meditative, more gentle classes. What is the difference between a class like that and just a regular class where you would stretch? What is it that makes yoga yoga?
In the stretching class, was she directing breath? Was she constantly bringing your awareness to your breath?
I don't remember. It was quite a while ago.
Okay. So yoga is very breath-oriented. To be consciously breathing, to be consciously participating in the inhales and the exhales. And most time you're going to be creating a one-to-one ratio of the inhale to exhale. Yoga is the practice of intention. Now, if you're stretching with intention and you're present to your breath, I would argue you're doing yoga. If you're rock climbing with intention and you're present and you're with your breath, I would say that's doing yoga. So I think yoga is the practice of intention with conscious awareness and the presence of breath. So I tell my students all the time, your yoga may look different at different times in your life. Let's say you're a student and you have exams coming up. You're not able to make it to your asana class or your physical practice. But the act of sitting down and studying could be your yoga.
Thank you for
that. But that's really getting sort of esoteric, a ethereal little tip, but...
Well, that's this show. That's what this show is all about. So that's okay. And I just want to put out there too, because we're talking about the Lululemon and the corporate and everything. I'm not bashing Lululemon. And if you like to use Botox or you like to go to the whatever, like it's whatever is good for you. Great. I feel intimidated.
Thank you for clarifying that. And I actually love Lululemon. I think they're a fantastic, company at the level I've worked with them. I think the girls are great. I enjoy Lululemon. I actually really like them. And in yoga, we have a concept called Shri, S-H-R-I. And that means life-affirming. So whatever is life-affirming for you, I don't practice a dogmatic philosophy. I practice what I would call a life-affirming philosophy. So in individual circumstances, to make the decision that's life-affirming for you. So if Botox makes you feel better and that's what's life-affirming for you, then by all means, get it. On the reverse side of that, because we're free to choose what is a life-affirming for us, we're also gravely responsible for the outcome. So I'm a big proponent of people, know why you're doing what you're doing, but do what's best for you. If that includes Botox, go for it.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. I just wanted to clarify that because one of the things is that I associate Lululemon with the higher end yoga studios and all of that. So that's why I'm saying the Lululemon. And I'm not saying if you wear Lululemon, you have Botox. I'm not any of that. I'm just sort of using that as, my association. And so I'm not trying to judge anyone's practice or how they live their life. Just it's maybe not what I'm comfortable with. That's all. Mm-hmm. So we have just a few more minutes left in the show. And Megan, I'm curious what you want to focus on for the last few minutes.
Oh, you know, we've covered a lot. The last few minutes. So let's talk about what a lot of people have been asking me in the end is what's the last advice I would give somebody? And whether you're new or not to yoga, I really try to let people and my students know just making it to a class, just making it to your mat if it's a DVD, just sitting down for 5 minutes, let yourself feel good about getting there. Let yourself feel pretty awesome about getting there. That's the hard part. Whatever happens during class, whether or not you can keep up, whether or not you take a child's pose and honor yourself in that way, let yourself feel good about it. Because being there is what the hard part is. I'm fine with if I had a student who came, put their mat down on the back and said they were going to lay down in Shavasana, which is the final pose where you're on your back, palms up, just resting, I'd be fine with that. Because that's what they would need. And they were making the time to take care of themselves. I don't think people are letting themselves feel good enough about what they do do. And because we get caught up in comparing.
Yeah.
I mean, I write all the time about comparing and keeping score. I mean, I come from a very competitive athletic background, so that's been very hard for me to manage in yoga and in teaching yoga in LA, as you can imagine.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, so what else would you say, if there's just one thing that you want listeners to take home today, what would that be?
To know that yoga is for everyone. No matter how old, what age, what shape, what injury, there is a practice for you. And really what yoga is about is connecting to you. I have a philosophy teacher that says yoga is a virtuosity of becoming yourself. So allowing yourself to get to know yourself is what yoga is all about. And don't deny yourself that because you think yoga is one thing or you think yoga is just about stretching and you're not flexible, which is the biggest myth out there. Do your research and just find the yoga, find the community that you feel comfortable, that you feel your best in, and that honors your gift. So that's the other great thing about yoga is it creates a community, and it's really helpful. I mean, I find this, especially in L.A., because people are busy. People are transplants. People don't have community here, so your yoga becomes a safe haven. And even if you don't hang out with your classmates outside of yoga, going there one time a week with the same people makes such a difference in your life. Having missing a class, having some, oh, where were you last week? I find that just lights people up.
Mm. I love that. Thank you. And I did actually want to ask you more about community as far as building a yoga community, because I do think Vancouver is very much similar to LA in the transplant aspect and people not having community. And so it does feel like something that's really important to be able to have that sense of community.
I think it's very important, and it's you know, it is difficult in cities like LA and Vancouver. When I was in, I started teaching in Scottsdale, and I started my yoga practicing in Scottsdale, and it was interesting because people weren't in such a rush after class to get on to the next thing. So it was very difficult for me when I landed in LA and I'd be after class be waiting to like meet and talk and introduce myself and everybody would just rush out. I think that you're missing out on that. I think taking the time to hang out a little bit after class, to talk to your community. Like I have classes where people won't even talk to each other and I'll go in and make everybody wear name tags and introduce themselves. I know it sounds corny, but you know, once you break that shell, people need contact. People need engagement. People need community. And yoga is a really great way to make one. But you have to go to the same class at the same time every week.
Thank you very much, Megan. So where is the best place for people to pick your yoga practice?
Well, if you go to my website, as you mentioned earlier, you'll be able to find links to buy it at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, also a link to Indiebound Books where you'll be able to find it at you know, independent bookstores, besides New World Library's website. It's out there, and it's easy to find. And if you Google or join my Facebook, Megan McCreary Yoga, it has tons of reviews all over, tons of other places, Spirit Voyage, places like that to buy it as well.
Great. So your website again is meganmccreary.com, and I will post a link up to that on my website on the past shows page when I post the podcast, and my website is spiritualshow.com. Well, before we wrap up and play a song, is there anything else you'd like to add?
You know, just besides letting yourself feel good about making, I am a person who likes to know, I feel better when I have information going in. And then even now, after having written the book, when I go to take a class, it's really exciting to, like, recognize elements. So I think if you're one of those people who likes to know what's going on, pick up the book, and then you're going to have a richer time in the class you choose to take.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure speaking with you, Megan.
Yeah, thank you, Marie. This was fun.
Thank you. Well, have a wonderful day, and good luck with your book.
Okay, thank you so much. You too.
Take care. Bye-bye. So again, that was Megan McCreary, and her book is called Pick Your Yoga Practice, and you can find her on Facebook at Megan McCreary Yoga, and you can find her on her website, meganmccreary.com. And this has been Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and next week we're going to be speaking with the producer of the movie What the Bleep Do We Know. Betsy Chase is going to be on talking about her new book, Tipping Sacred Cows. So check back for more Synchronicity next Monday at 12 o'clock Pacific. And I just want to end the show with a song by Surya Devi. And yeah, that's all I have to say. So I want to send you lots and lots of love. Be well. Namaste.
Great Vajradhara, Tilopa, Naropa, Marpa, Milarepa, Lord of Dharma, Gampopa, Knower of the Three Times, Omniscient Karmapa, Lineage Holders of the Four Great and Eight Lesser Kaju Schools, Masters of the Profound Path of Mahamudra, the Dakpo Kaju, unrivaled protectors of sentient beings. I prayerfully request of you, all the Kaju Gurus, to grant your blessings that I may follow your example and hold your lineage. Renunciation is the foot of meditation, thus it is taught. Not clinging to food or wealth, to the meditator who always turns to you, grant your blessing that attachment to possessions and honor cease. Devotion is the head of meditation, as it is taught. The guru opens the door to the treasury of oral teachings. To the meditator who always turns to you, grant your blessing that pure, unconditional devotion arise. Unwavering awareness is the body of meditation, thus it is taught. Whatever thought arises, its nature is fresh. To the meditator who leaves it alone as is, grant your blessings that meditation be free from the object of meditation. The nature of thought is dharmakaya, thus it is taught. Thought is nothing whatsoever, yet everything arises from it. To the meditator who allows the unobstructed play of the mind to manifest, grant your blessings that the inseparability of samsara and nirvana be realized. In all my births, may I not be separated from my perfect guru, so I may enjoy the Dharma in all its glory. Accomplishing the good qualities of the path and the 10 bhumis, may I quickly attain the state of Dorje Chang.
You're listening to CITR on 101.9. That was smooth.